Someone else? Yes?
So, when you're doing the meditation, and going back to physical sensations, when you have one physical sensation and another one rises more strong than the first one,
right.
You switch. Is it best to switch right away to the other one, or go back to breathing and then switch?
Oh, you're welcome to switch to the predominant one. I wouldn't be in a hurry to do anything. The way you said, you know, look. But you can just, in an easygoing way, you can switch over to what's predominant. The general instructions in this practice we're doing here is we pay attention to that which is most prominent, predominant, or the most compelling in the moment. And so it's kind of like what is asking for attention in the moment. So if you're staying with one sensation and another sensation in your body, physical sensation, becomes stronger than that, then you can just simply switch. Do that. Occasionally it might be useful just to stay where you are for a while. It's gotten interesting. I'll stay there and get to know it better. But that's fine to do. There's no hard and fast rules. The important rule is we're trying to stay attentive. And where attention goes is secondary. So, but yeah, generally the general principle is go to what's most predominant.
Yeah, but since this is my understanding was to use the breathing as the anchor for everything. Let's say I'm going to switch from a body sensation to an emotion or vice versa, then that there won't be a need to go back to breathing and then switch.
I'll repeat the question. Yeah. He's asking that he wants to know about the breath being an anchor for the practice. And if you're sitting there quietly and following your breath, and then you have a strong body sensation someplace, and so you let go of the breath and you go pay attention to the body sensation, and then another body sensation arises or a strong emotion arises, do you just simply switch to the strong emotion or the other strong sensation, or do you go back to the breath a little bit since that's the anchor of the practice? And generally, you can just let go. You don't have to be so concerned about the breath. Let go of it entirely, as long as you can be in the present moment. Occasionally, if the mind is very distractible and it's hard to stay with something, then you might go back to the breath to get stabilized again, to get centered. And once you're a little bit centered, then you can go and focus on what's happening. But if you're basically present, then you don't have to go back to the breath. And you just, you know. And it's possible to spend a whole session of meditation not touching into the breath once, because you're present enough. You know what's going on. But you're here with the body sensation, then a feeling, and then a sound, and then thinking, and you're present for the whole phenomena of being a human being. And the breath isn't that pronounced. The other things are much more pronounced. And if nothing else is going on, nothing else seems to be compelling or pronounced, then we come back to the breathing. Then breathing is kind of like the default. We always go back to the breathing when we're unsure. If we're unsure what to pay attention to, then just go back to the breath. Don't think about it anymore. And enough questions? Okay. So, in a few minutes, we'll start with a little meditation session. But I would like to first mention something. Or have you do an exercise. And that is, make a fist. And now make your fist really hard. I mean, don't damage yourself now and do this exercise, but make it as hard as you can without having to go to Kaiser. You know, really hard. And really, so your knuckles and everything get white, and just really hard. Hold it really hard. You have to really make effort, right? Really make it hard effort. Now, you keep it that way until I tell you something else, right? Keep it? You're doing it? Okay, keep it. So I'm going to tell you how you catch a monkey in India. And maybe some of you don't know this. You take it, hold it hard. Now you take a coconut and you make a kind of a slot in it. And you put a candy inside the coconut. And you tie the coconut to a rope, to a tree. And the monkey comes along. And the monkey sticks its hand into that slot to get the candy. Are you holding your hand just as hard as you were before? Are you sure? Are you really... And then the monkey gets the candy, and it can't get its fist out because it's grasping it this way out of that slot. So, and the monkey's so greedy the monkey doesn't want to let go of that candy. And so it can't get free, though, because he's stuck to that coconut that's tied to the tree. And the hunter just comes along and picks up the monkey and probably never gets his candy. So you can let go now. Now, sorry. Now, in order to keep your fist that tight, did you have to kind of reassert effort all the time? Or could you just kind of, once you did it, it was done deal. You could just frozen. You had to kind of like, what was the tendency of your fist? Like, oh, kind of naturally, right? And then you have to kind of assert yourself in order to keep it tight. Well, this is kind of often, this is kind of the nature of attachment or holding or clinging. It takes effort to cling and to hold on. And attachment and clinging only continues through time because we're continuing to apply the effort, making the effort. Usually we don't see that we're making effort, that we're feeding to it. And the natural tendency of all holding, of all attachment, is it's almost like some people say the request of the attachment is to be released. Like you'd almost say that the request of the fist is to be released. So all our attachments, kind of inside, there's a natural movement towards liberation, towards freedom. However, we come along and we keep putting in the effort to cling. We reinforce it, we fuel it, we support it, we give nourishment to it. We, you know, do things to keep our attachments in place. What the Buddhist tradition says, or the way the Buddhist tradition talks about spirituality, it puts a lot of emphasis on clinging as being one of the core issues bringing suffering to human beings. And so Buddhists tend to want to look at clinging and tend to look at things maybe normally we wouldn't think of as being clinging, but they tend to see clinging in a lot of places we normally wouldn't think about. So, for example, if you think, many people when think about clinging, they might think about clinging to material things or clinging to pleasure or clinging to opinions. Or it's a lot of obvious things that people cling to. But there are very subtle things that are very have a profound effect on our lives. And there's things like clinging to our self-concept, to our self-image. Clinging even, not even to our self-image, but clinging to the very sense of I am. And that seems very innocent, you know. Everybody, I am, right? Aren't you someone? There's a very sense of beingness, of I am-ness. It seems like pretty innocent. But what the Buddhists will say is that even this very seemingly innocent phenomena of feeling like here I am, sense of presence here, I am, itself represents a very subtle form of clinging. So Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis on understanding the nature of clinging and appreciating that inherent in clinging itself is a movement to liberation. And so it's not so much that, you know, you have to listen to these good Buddhists telling you let go of your clinging, as it is that you listen very deeply to your own clinging. You'll see almost that there's a movement, a momentum there, an imperative or an urge to let go, to become free. But then we don't want to. And sometimes it's the lawyers of the mind that come in, explain why we should cling or why it's a good idea or why it's not safe to let go. And sometimes we're afraid to let go, and there's all kinds of reasons why we stay with our clinging. But some of it has to do with not really knowing well enough, or not knowing in some experiential way, that there is an alternative. That the mind, the psyche, that the deep places within us, there's a place there where we can be in the world without clinging to all the many, many subtle things and gross things that we cling to. We don't know that. Or we've had some of you have had some hints of it in different kinds of times in your life. But to really kind of be convinced that this is a kind of like a birthright of all of us, or a place we come home to, is part of what Buddhist spirituality points to. So I say all this as an introduction to our next topic, which is how to be mindful of thinking. And thinking thoughts themselves are not meant to be taken as the enemy or the problem in meditation. It's quite common for people who know a little bit about meditation to have the idea that in meditation your mind's supposed to have no thoughts at all. And it's quite common for meditators to make thinking their enemy. It makes some sense, because often it's the thinking that makes them distracted, makes them not be present. And since the goal is to be present, that seems to be what we're fighting against. But really, one of the best attitudes is to have it not be in conflict with your thinking, and not to set up some kind of duality between silent mind and a mind that has thoughts, one is being better than the other. What we're being asked to do in mindfulness is simply to notice what's actually happening in the present. And if what's happening in the present you're thinking, to notice that. And so we'll talk. I'll talk more about what that means and how to do that and why that's helpful as we go along. But one of the things you'll probably discover if you do this investigation, begin paying attention to thinking, is that our thoughts to a great degree continue through time because of something like clinging to them, some variation of clinging. We fuel them, we keep them going, we keep getting engaged in them. And if we simply don't engage in them anymore, then they would simply fade away. There's no fuel for them anymore. And they only stay there because of our continuing re-engagement, just like the fist. And in fact, what happens, what you probably discover, is that much of our thinking that goes on innocently enough is a manifestation or is an expression or is entangled with clinging in it, some kind of attachment or holding on or resisting or something that is the fuel for that kind of thinking activity. So our thinking itself isn't so innocent from the Buddhist point of view. Thinking isn't meant to be an enemy. It's fine to think. It should be a friendly relationship to your thoughts. What you'll discover as you do this is that, wow, I didn't realize how much my thinking was being fueled by my emotions, my feelings, my clinging, my fears, my resistance, and all these kinds of things. And to begin getting a sense of that is part of the stepping stones, steps to setting the thoughts free. Just like the fist wants to be free, our thinking, a thinking mind, wants to be free also. And to have a thinking mind that's free is really a beautiful thing. It still thinks, but there's no compulsion to think. And many of us, I think, you probably find if you do some meditation that, you know, it's kind of amazing how much the mind is compelled to think. Aren't some of you in awe of that? Oh, no.
I felt my thoughts are so boring. Oh, my God.
They are? You thought they were.
They're terribly boring. Oh, like the same old stupid thoughts over and over again.
You hear that? The same old thoughts.
Yeah, I never really realized it before.
That's a good insight. Often I do this intro class. I tell a little story about how, if someone else came along next to me and spoke as much to me as I spoke to myself, and did it as repetitively, I would certainly ask them to be quiet. I'd beg them to be quiet. I'd pay them to be quiet. I might even do something more dramatic, and I might try to get them institutionalized. But what I find most amazing for me is that after 500 times saying more of the same thing, it's still just as interesting as the first time. Why is that? And I think it has a lot to do with the kind of clinging or kind of attachment we have to sense of self. And you probably, if you look at your kind of thoughts that you have, probably a fair number of them will have to have some relationship to how you want to be seen and how you see yourself, how you're afraid you're seen. Planning ahead so that you'll be okay. Rehearsing a conversation that repeating a conversation that used to happen so it can be better, so you can kind of justify yourself. Or, you know, a lot of thinking is around this kind of phenomenon of self. And so there's a lot of attachment there. And so it's very interesting. It's one way of creating permanence, security. We think we're creating security that way. And if you hold your fist really tight because that's the secure thing to do, because then no one's going to get close to you, right? After a while, your hand will atrophy or something terrible will happen there. Your fingernails will grow into your palm. And so some of the things we do in order to try to make ourselves safe often are counterproductive. And one of the wonderful things that we can discover through this practice is how to set our thinking free. And that's quite nice. So let's do a sitting. And if you'd like to stand for 30 seconds or a minute and stretch, you're welcome to do that. So taking a stable, alert posture. Giving some attention to your spine and perhaps straightening out your spine a little bit more than you normally would. Lifting up maybe from the back of the neck. Gently closing your eyes. And then taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you fill yourself with breath, feel the body stretch, expand in all directions. And as you exhale, relax the torso, the shoulders, the belly. Taking a deep breath in, not forcing the breath, but kind of an easygoing, deep, full breath, appreciating your breathing, and then softly relaxing, gentling yourself as you exhale. As you exhale, let go, release yourself to the support that your body gives for the weight above it, the support that your chair or cushion gives for your body, the floor. As you exhale, relax the thinking mind. No need to think anything right now. Just let go as you exhale. And then letting your breath return to normal, completely normal breath, no special effort. And take a few moments to feel your body, sense of presence from the inside of the body. The sense of being in a body, the beingness of the body. And then within the body, as part of the body, become aware of your breathing, how the body experiences breathing. If it's helpful, you might remember as you exhale to let go of your thoughts that have crept in, even if it's just to soften them a little bit. Momentary stillness at the end of the out-breath. Feeling the body's experience of breathing. Feeling how the body changes as you breathe. Changing sensations, expansion and contraction. Feel the changes of breathing. Some people feel sometimes like the breathing is giving you an internal massage. As you breathe, the breathing affects your body. Stay there and allow that effect to happen. Allow yourself to be breathed. Feeling it, sensing it. Hang in there with the rhythm of breathing, one breath after the other. See if you can stay connected to the stream, current of breathing in and out and in and out. Perhaps you use a mental label, note in your mind, in, out, to help you stay connected. If you find your mind wanders away in thought, one of the most important things about thinking and meditation is don't let yourself be bothered by that. It's really normal and natural for the mind to think. Don't be against it or judge it. But when you do notice the mind has wandered off in thought, then gently let go of it, if you can, and begin again with your breath. Come back again to breathing. When the mind drifts off and you notice, come back again to breathing. Tune into the breath again. Receive the breathing sensations again. Begin appreciating your breathing again. always remembering that the most important aspect of this meditation is noticing what is happening in the present. If it's difficult to be with the breath because other things are happening, just notice that. Recognize what is happening. There's no need to fight anything or struggle against anything. You're asked to simply notice what is happening. And as you notice it, see if you can notice it with a calm awareness, relaxed awareness. And now for the next short period of the meditation, you can let go of your breathing, paying attention to it, and begin simply noticing your thinking. It's okay to think. Let yourself think whatever way your mind wants to think. But notice very clearly, oh, this is thinking happening. You might even use a very quiet whisper in the mind of a mental note, acknowledging that this is what's happening by acknowledging with a label, thinking, in a relaxed way. What happens when you look thinking straight in the face? Don't be against it. Don't need to judge it. No need to get rid of it. But just try to see it clearly for what it is. Don't try to think. Don't try not to think. And then see if you can notice something about the thinking process, your thoughts, your thinking, that's not the content of them, not what you're thinking about. So, for example, can you notice whether your thoughts are happening fast or slow? Are they shy? They disappear quickly if you're acknowledging them, or they get stronger? Is your thinking hesitant or powerful? Can you perhaps notice the tone of the inner voice, the quality of that inner voice, like you were listening to someone else speak and you can hear whether in their voice that they were relaxed or agitated or angry or happy or harsh or gentle? Can you notice if there's any physical energy or physical sensations, pressure or tension associated with your thinking? Is there a physical side to it? And then letting go of all that. Come back again now to your breathing. Just for another 2 minutes, we'll sit here and breathe mindfully. Feeling your breath, taking refuge in your breath. One of the classic kind of teaching images for meditation in Buddhism is the image of a pond that is muddy. And someone's come along and stirred up the bottom of the pond, and so it's all muddy. And in order to have a clear pond, what you need to do is leave the pond alone, and all the sediments will settle out, and the pond will become clear again. But if you come along and stir up the pond some more, then it'll stay agitated, it'll stay muddy, and it'll never settle. And so that image is used for meditation because the mind's tendency by itself is to settle, is to become peaceful. The tendency of the fist is to relax. But we come along and we stir it up. So in relationship to thinking, it's common enough for people to stir up the pond about the thinking, about whatever's going on. This shouldn't be happening. This is wrong. This is bad. This has to stop. This is embarrassing. This means it's hopeless for me. And we have all this, I got to do something about this. I better kind of grit my teeth and bear down and really get serious about my breath, or I better, we get agitated and worried about what does this mean, and does this mean I'll never learn to meditate, and all these things are ways of not leaving the pond alone, is stirring the pond, is keeping the mud going. And so there's a lot about meditation, just learning to get out of your own way. And so the Zen master Suzuki Roshi gave some advice around thinking that was very helpful for me. And he said, when you're meditating, don't be bothered by your thoughts. And if you're bothered by your thoughts, you're going to stir up the pond. But if you're not bothered by your thoughts, then the thoughts will kind of have a better chance to dissipate, to relax. Because we get bothered, we fuel it. There's a great story from the Buddha's time of the Buddha about an ugly little runt of a troll. They didn't have trolls in India, but they called them yakshas, yakka. So that's what I call it. Is that good enough, a troll? And this was an ugly little runt of a teeny troll. And he went to to visit the palace of the great god Brahma. Brahma was the kind of like the Zeus of the ancient Indian pantheon, so he was like the main dude. And he had this palace and he had this throne. And so this troll went up to this and sat down on the throne of Brahma. Brahma was away doing something else that day. And he sat on Brahma's throne. And all the other gods around the court saw this, and it's very disrespectful to anybody to sit on the high Brahma's throne. So they said, you have to get down from there, you can't be up there, this is very disrespectful. And the more they kept telling him he had to get down, the more they kind of expressed their frustration and their anger and all this, the bigger and more beautiful and stronger this little troll got, until he became this huge, beautiful, radiant, powerful being. And they were quite confused. So finally they went and found Brahma and explained what had happened. And he said, oh, I know what's going on. And so he went back to his throne, and he stood in front of his throne and saw the being there. And he bowed to it and said, it's nice to see you. I'm glad you're here. I hope you're comfortable. Can I maybe bring you some tea? Or I don't know what, just offered him kindness and respect. And as he did that, the troll started to shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink, till finally, poof, he just vanished. And then Brahma got back up on his throne. And Brahma said to everyone, he said, well, this was an anger-eating troll. And the more you were angry, the more it thrived. And if you stopped, and offered respect in return, left it alone, it would just vanish. It doesn't have its food. It depends on anger to live. So maybe it's a little bit, sad story. It disappeared after all in the end. But these points, it's kind of like a myth, right, that points to how our mind works. That sometimes even anger, being frustrated and angry at what's going on in our psyche, in our mind, our emotions, our thoughts, ourselves, in some way fuels and strengthens the very thing that we're trying to not have. So the attitude of not being bothered by things, it doesn't mean kind of a nonchalance and whatever goes, goes, but at least in meditation, to not be bothered by, not be reactive to what's going on, is a very important teaching. So around thoughts, this is very important. So we're not trying in meditation necessarily to stop having thoughts. It can happen sometimes, and it can be quite exquisite to have that happen. But the goal of meditation is not to have a mind that's empty of thoughts. The goal of this meditation is to have a mind that is able to clearly see, clearly be free and see what's happening in the present moment. And so we have to learn how to bring that mindfulness to thinking also, as opposed to thinking we have to let go of thoughts, just get rid of it. So how do we do that? It depends a little bit on the intensity of the thinking that's happening. If it's if you're easy to let go of your thoughts, your thinking, then by all means let go of it. If it's just surface chatter, and no import or whatever, it's easy to let go of, just let go of it. And go back to your breathing, just be with your breath. And sometimes if it's just kind of, you need to kind of a little bit give some priority, some strength, your attention to the breath, to override the pull into destructive kind of superficial wanderings of the mind. So there is some effort being made to overcome the tendency to think. But you don't want to be stressed about it or be bothered by thoughts or be struggling with it too much. It's like it's a good idea to kind of be focused and concentrated the best you can. But at some points, your thinking is not going to be let go of so easily. When you can't let go of your thoughts easily, or if you can let go of it and it comes right back immediately, then you want to just forget it and let go of the breath and let yourself clearly bring your attention to the event of thinking. This is what's happening in the present moment. So don't fight it. See it. Look at it. Clearly recognize this is what's going on. So that's what we did as part of this meditation. At some point I ask you to switch and just recognize your thinking, maybe label it as thinking and just notice it and see it. What happened to some of you as you did that?
Didn't have any thoughts.
You didn't have any thoughts. Sometimes thinking is very shy that way. And partly that's because when we're not paying attention to thinking sometimes, the mind is actually subtly fueling it. But if we notice, if we bring our attention clearly to see thinking, we're less likely to be fueling it. And so it tends to dissipate quite quickly. But not always. So what are some other experiences? Yes?
This tonight was the toughest for me. And getting into it, I was feeling kind of cocky because it's been a great day and I thought this is going to be a great sit. And I actually had an incredible challenge when the sirens started. And for me, that was 13 years of Catholic school, and every time a siren goes off, you stop. And you say Hail Marys until it's gone. So I got Hail Mary like going nonstop. And part of me thought, it's like a chant. I don't know what Hail Mary means. I mean, in all my years of saying them, I've really never broken them down. In Catholic religion, you don't do that so much. You just mumble it out. And so part of it felt like a chant. When I finally let go and allowed myself to just go on with my Hail Marys, then I wasn't doing the fight of it. But it was really difficult. And then it went away for a little bit, and then the sirens came back. and then I came back. So it was hard.
But you learned that it's better not to fight it.
It was better not to fight it.
So that's
but
what...
you always realize that those outside things...
trigger it.
Change the experience very quickly for me.
Yeah. Someone else.
I kind of noticed that stop thinking thing, and then there was a little thinking, but the thinking that I had was very light.
Uh-huh.
It was like a little, much smaller, and not as strong.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of a little voice.
Nice. Thinking can get very, very subtle, and sometimes it can get so subtle that you're sitting there and you could, and you have this thought that says, I'm not thinking anything right now. and you believe it.
I had a sense that I was looking through a camera to shift focus, so my depth of field changed.
Uh-huh.
And so I was aware that there were some thoughts in there, there were some physical sensations in there. And there was a kind of emotional state in there. And they were all there all at the same time, but they weren't all right up in front of me.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the thoughts would be foremost, sometimes the physical sensation. So they kept changing back.
Yes,
forth,
yes.
Like that. And I never had a sense that there was just nothing there. But the things that were there changed.
Great. Yeah. Don't set up some idea that nothing's supposed to be the goal. the goal is just to notice what is happening. And if that's what's happening, it's great. It's a great report. Great. Yes? In there, That's very important. So what we pay attention to then is you can pay attention to what it feels like to be engaged. Because that's all, there's thinking going on, and in addition to the thinking, there's the kind of engagement, the compulsion, the interest and whatever. And then so you can get into the felt sense of that compulsion, that engagement. And if you don't do that, see this is very interesting because the idea is to always pay attention to what's the most predominant or what's the strongest operating principle. So what probably was most important there was the engagement, the interest, the preoccupation with it, rather than the thoughts themselves or thinking itself. So you want to back away from the thinking and notice, oh, this is what it feels like to be preoccupied, to be caught, and just hang out with that sense of caughtness. And probably if you do that, it'll probably die down quicker. Caughtness is another fist. Yes?
I had a very odd experience that there was something that's been preoccupying me throughout the day, just an upsetting thing going on in my life. That's a big thing. And my mind kept going in and out of that throughout the meditation, but when you rang the bell, I thought it was about 5 minutes. And I was like shocked that it was. I found myself wondering how long was it? Not 5 minutes, maybe 10. You know, and I realized that I had had some different experience that I couldn't account for because I totally lost time. But I was aware of. I was aware of leaving the thoughts, but I always came back to those thoughts, and then kind of letting go and. Leaving them and coming back, and then the time flew by.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Were you quite involved or engaged in the process of paying attention when you were?
I was, and then I would kind of just, I don't know what happened.
How did you feel at the end of the meditation?
Very relaxed.
Great. Sounds good.
When I have the thoughts, seem like I'm not present.
When you're thinking thoughts, you're not present.
I'm not present.
When you're thinking.
Yeah. But when I come back to breathing, then
I'm present.
I'm present.
So he says that when he's lost in thoughts, he's not present. When he comes back to breath, he is present. Now, what we're trying to do here is there's another option, and that is to be present for yourself thinking.
I tried to do that.
It's hard. So then I asked you something else to look at, and that is, could you tell something else? Can you notice something else about your thinking besides the content? So, for example, could you notice the energetics of it, or the quality of the voice, or the strength of it, or the weakness of it, or something like that? Well, does that make sense to any of you? Anything get show itself? What did you notice? Any of you were surprised by the tone of voice? Very familiar. Someone else? Yeah.
I've noticed in the last few weeks that voice varies, the tone, the attitude. You know, to me, it's like this narrating voice that tells me how it is, or how, you know, it's stating quality of. It's like takes. It's like this fantasy or story that it leads me into, and then I feel like I buy it, hook, line, and sinker. Like, this is the way it is. This is the, you know, and I go, wait, I was meditating, and I come back. But and I felt the same way that it's like coming and out of it, and in any particular meditation, it's pretty much that direction or that tone. And then on another day, at another time, it'll be completely different. Just another style of chatter.
And a new world you're living in.
Right.
Yeah. Great. It's great to see that. It's see the pattern of it. It's a way of starting to get free of it. The anybody else? Yes.
When I was meditating this morning, there's something I do that I've been looking at, which is I've begun to see as I've been trying to observe my inner mind a little bit more that I do a lot of fantasizing, and I do a lot of fantasizing where I'm sort of the superhero fantasy of various social causes or whatever, and I judge that a lot. And I had that experience this morning of seeing myself in this situation and, you know, making brilliant statements. And then the minute I realized what I was doing, it's just I immediately cut the whole fantasy off. Like, you know, that there's that big fat ego, you know, or I don't know what. And I was thinking about it later, would the right attitude have been the minute, you know, to become aware that here's the story that repeats various scenarios, but it's this very repetitive story, and just sort of watch it. Like, I often wondered, where would that, I was thinking later today, where would that fantasy have ended if I hadn't stopped it with that voice that said, it wasn't just saying you're thinking, it said, there you go again, you're fantasizing, yeah. And go back to your breath, you know, like... And it dawned on me that maybe I wasn't quite sure how to deal with that kind of thinking that's so emotional.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. So the end question was, what do I do with all this thinking that's so emotional? There's so much investment, so much self involved, and the great savior, and
absolutely.
And all this stuff. And it's very compelling, and there's a lot of emotions behind it. So in a few minutes, I'll talk a little bit more about that. So one of the things about thinking is that it's a fascinating world to start paying attention to, because it's the world that most people live in all the time, and it's the world that affects how we see the others and see ourselves and our choices we make. And one of the things that happens for many people is that they believe their thoughts. And often our thinking has a kind of authority that goes unquestioned. And what the lady there said was very interesting. The way we think about the world can change from day to day, quite radically, depending on our mood and what's happening with us and whatever. And remember, my wife went through a medically induced, a short period of time, she was going to do surgery, and she needed to take some medication that caused her to have start going through menopause. So medically induced menopause for about 3 months. And her comments was, you know, these thoughts I'm having, they're not my thoughts. And she had enough presence to kind of, you know, not believe her thoughts. And see, they were so different than what she usually thinks. And so she didn't identify with them. She didn't believe them and wasn't caught by them. But oftentimes, it's just changing mood and stuff kind of sneak up on us and whatever. And we kind of believe our thoughts. And one of the very liberating things that meditation can teach us is we don't have to believe our thoughts. And they're interesting. You know, they're nice. But, you know, you don't have to believe them. They're not necessarily the last word about how reality is. So there's a lot to discover in the world of thoughts, and it can change our relationship to a lot of different things very quickly by simply seeing thoughts for what it is. It's thought is thinking. Mostly what we're doing is we're seduced by the content of the thought, the stories around the thinking. And we get caught by it and lost in it, and we're rehearsing history, or we're making plans, or we're living fantasy, or whatever, and we're caught in the content of it. But if we step out of the content and just observe the thinking itself and observe the whole phenomena, almost as if we're outside watching it, you'll probably find a lot of freedom and a lot of power and strength and that you probably didn't know that it was available to you. So in meditation practice, one of the guidelines is to always try to be simple about the practice you're doing. And if the instructions I'm giving you around thinking starts making it too complicated, forget about them. Maybe you're ready in a year for this kind of instructions. Just go back and be with the breath for a year and develop stability and concentration there. You don't have to open up as quickly to this world of thoughts. But you might find it helpful. If it's not helpful, maybe don't use it. But if it's helpful, if it helps you make it simpler, then maybe use it. So if it's easy to let go of your thoughts, just let go of them and come back to the breathing. And a lot of meditation is letting go and coming back to the breath, letting go of thoughts, coming back over and over again. It's very effective, very helpful in the long term to do that. But if your thinking is so compelling you can't let go of it easily, or if you let go of it, it seems to come back over and over again right away, as soon as you let go of it, the same thing, same kind of thought over and over again, then let go of your breath and just clearly acknowledge your thinking. Maybe use the mental label, thinking, thinking, thinking. Clearly recognize what you're thinking. And sometimes that when you clearly acknowledge it, as some of you found, it dissipates by itself. If you don't just acknowledge it, but you also acknowledge it and say, this better be out of here by 2 minutes, or this is terrible, or whatever, then you've stirred the pot, you've stirred the pond. And probably it's going to be a lot easier, a lot more difficult to let go of your thoughts or have them quiet down if you're agitated about them, if you judge them in that way. But just acknowledge it. This is what's going on. Part of it can be trying to find out how to be equanimous about the thinking there, how to be non-reactive about whatever you're thinking about, how not to judge it or something. And just let it be what it is. Just acknowledge it clearly. It doesn't have to go away, but in the acknowledging of it, you might find your freedom from it. You might find you don't have to believe it or be pulled into it or whatever. If it's much more compelling than that, really powerful, then you might want to investigate a little bit more what's going on, because it's available there. It's kind of going, running along. And you might look at, for example, the engagement. You might look at the way in which the feeling of compulsion behind it, the drivenness that seems to be behind it, the energy of that seems to be part of it. You might be aware of the emotions that are part of it. And many times, very compelling thinking is fueled by the emotions, by emotions. So, for example, when people spend a lot of time planning, and even if you can let go of planning easily, but next moment you notice you're planning again, probably what's underneath that, or kind of where the ground of that, is for most people is some kind of apprehension, some kind of fear or anxiety. And so you open to the anxiety, the emotion. And if you don't acknowledge the emotion that's there, the fear that's there in terms of planning, the fear is going to still want to kind of pump out planning thoughts. So if you let go of planning, the factory for that kind of thought is still in place, and it'll just make more thoughts. That's why just letting go of it once doesn't work. So sometimes when thinking is very incessant, very kind of filling your time, it's very hard to do anything else but think in meditation, then drop down into your body and see what emotion is there. And then feel it. And you might feel, there's a whole range of things that you might feel. But as you begin feeling it in your body, you might noticing what's driving it. And as you, then you do whole, then you do emotions meditation. And then you probably find very quickly you don't need to think those things, those thoughts anymore. It's almost like the emotion is what wants attention. But it's sending up a flag. It's saying, hey, you, pay attention over here. But most of us pay attention to the flag, which is, you know, so the thoughts are most like, thoughts are most pointing us back, but we don't realize that. So sometimes you want to go back and feel the emotion that's there and hang out and see what happens as you hang out with that. Sometimes there's a physical manifestation connected to thinking, if it's very compelling. And so you very simply kind of tune into the physical aspect of what's happening with thinking. And so it might feel like a lot of pressure in the head. It might feel like tightness in the forehead or vibration or pressure. It might feel like just bumblebees, kind of 10,000 bumblebees. It might be, sometimes I notice myself that if I'm very present and relaxed and centered, it's kind of like my center of gravity. My center is kind of down low in my torso. But then if suddenly something happens and I go up into my thinking, just that expression, right? I find that my energy, the energy center, whatever, my body, goes up. And I can feel a shift, almost like my weight is lifted up into my torso. And that's very interesting to notice the shift that happens in your sense of your energy, your weight, your sense of presence, as you get caught by your thoughts. And when you let go of it and drop down again. So you can pay attention to energetically what's going on. Any way that you can pay attention to the process of thinking that's not the content of your thoughts helps you stay in the present moment. But if you start paying attention to the content of what you're thinking, the chances are you're going to be caught by that content and you're going to start thinking about that content. So we like to say that in mindfulness meditation, we don't pay attention to the content of our thoughts, but we do bring attention to thinking. You might be aware of the content as you do it, but that's not really the point. So you're not trying to solve the content, you're not trying to fix it or analyze the content or why is that content there. You're supposed to try to stay in the present moment of what's actually happening right now. So we say in meditation the point is to be in the present moment. But there's a wonderful thing here. If you're thinking about the future or thinking about the past, then you're not in the present moment, right? That's what people think. Where do you think thinking about the present, thinking about the past is occurring? It's not occurring in the future. It's not occurring in the past. Where could it be but in the present? That's, you know, you are in the, you can't leave the present. What you're asked to do is to notice that thinking about the future is happening in the present. If you do that, then you're in the present moment. You don't have to stop thinking about the future, but you see it as a present event. If you see it as a present event, that clearly, you're also not going to be leaning forward or lost into the future or the past. Is this making sense, what I'm talking about? Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Should I try again, or should we try again? So when you're thinking about the past, when you're thinking about the past, where is that, in what time, what place and time in, is thinking about the past occurring? Now. Can you notice that right now, if you were thinking about the past, can you notice that you're thinking about the past? So you don't have to stop thinking about the past in order to wake up. You have to wake up to that right now is a person thinking about the past. So again, I say that so we don't think we have to be in opposition to what's happening. Oh, it's bad to be thinking about the past. I have to stop that. I'm a bad meditator. The basic idea always is to notice what's happening in the present moment. And the amazing, sometimes infuriating, but the amazing aspect about this practice is that it is phenomenally simple. And it just can't be that simple. You know, there has to be more to it. It has to be more sophisticated. It has to be some more, you know, this must be kind of the preparation for the real, kind of real thing or whatever. But the basic idea, the basic default, the basic simplicity is notice what's happening now. In the most obvious way that it's happening now. Now, is that something you can do? Is that so difficult? It's easy. What's difficult to do is remember to do it. And so that's where practice comes in. And so we do this practice, and meditation practice is a very good laboratory or gymnasium or something for doing and kind of strengthening that capacity. Come back, wake up, notice, notice, notice. And you start developing this muscle, the strength of being able to be in the present, come back to the present, enjoying the present, finding value in being present. It's a lot easier to be in the present moment or to practice coming into the present moment if you find that being in the present is valuable. If you don't find any value to it, why would the mind want to be there? So hopefully you'll find that that's the case. So, to repeat then what I've already said, when we sit down to meditate, we sit down, get ourselves centered, stable, upright, and then the first thing to do is to tune into your breathing. And to use the breath as a place to relax, to calm, get centered, get focused a little bit. At some point, after a time, and that time might be 2 seconds, or it might be 20 minutes, at some point you'll find that you can't really stay with the breath so easily because something else is more compelling, is more pronounced. Then in a very easy way, you let go of the breath and you take on that other thing as the subject of meditation. So if it's sensations in your body, you do body meditation, mindfulness of the body. If it's emotions, you do mindfulness of emotions. If it's thinking, you do mindfulness of thinking. If you find that mindfulness of thinking is making you more thoughtful and more confused, then just let go. Just come back and just pour yourself into the breath again with some renewed vigor and enthusiasm. But if bringing attention, mindfulness to the process of thinking in a very simple way is helpful for you to stay present it doesn't spin you out, then you can practice mindfulness of thinking. Name the thinking, recognize it, acknowledge it, feel it, feel the thinking phenomena, what the thinking process is. Most of us think thinking is maybe kind of disembodied kind of thing. It's invisible. It doesn't really, you know, where. But thinking will always have a physical aspect to it. And sometimes the mind has to be very, very sensitive to see the physical component aspect, the energetic aspect of our thinking. But there's always something physical there with our thinking, some physical sense of pressure or movement or tension or vibration or energy or something. So you tune into that physical aspect of it, or you tune into the emotional aspect that's connected to your thinking. And just hang out with it. Be very simple, very matter-of-fact about it. Try to be relaxed. See if you can discover this kind of calm, deliberate attention you can bring to these different things. And then see where it goes from there. If the thinking dissipates or disappears, then you go back to your breathing. Or you go back to some other sensation that might be pronounced. The idea is to keep the meditation really simple. So I repeated myself. So is this clear enough? So now it's your turn. You have any questions or other comments? Yes.
Question. Then how would you relate this to the natural tendency to relax like a fist?
Well, I think that what you'll find is that many times your thinking is there because you're not relaxed. The thinking happens when you are relaxed, but many of us are not relaxed enough in our life, and so there's a way in which we're fueling and feeding the thoughts. So if I'm anxious about the future, that I feel compelled to plan tomorrow because I want to try to make myself safe. I want to get everything lined up and in order and everything considered. And so the reason I keep thinking is because I'm clinging to my fear or clinging to my resistance to a certain image of what might happen, or I'm clinging to some desired outcome or some image of myself in relationship to that. I'm holding on to something. And that holding on then is feeding and fueling wanting to plan really well. But what the fear or the clinging, what it wants to do is to relax. So if you can see that clearly, the emotion, the clinging, the energy, and step out of its way, what it wants to do is to relax. And as it relaxes, then you're no longer feeding your thinking. To make a distinction which I like, which is not English, is I make a distinction between thoughting and thinking. What the mind does is it produces thoughts. You can't really stop it from producing thoughts. It's what it does. But thinking is often when we get involved with that thought and we start creating a chain of association because of it. So I'm sitting here and my mind suddenly pops up a thought about breakfast. It's easy to do, right? Suddenly I think about breakfast. And then, oh, breakfast. What would be a great breakfast? You know, I don't have those great ingredients at home. I wonder if there's time in the morning to go out to a house of pancakes. You know, I could probably figure out how to do it. I have to set the alarm a little bit earlier. And I have to probably slip out before my wife wakes up so she doesn't notice, because she doesn't really like me leaving that early in the morning. And so how am I going to do that? And then, you know, our relationship is not going to be... She's going to notice at some point that she's not going to like that. And, you know, our relationship is under some stress these days. And this is not going to be so good. And maybe we need to go to couples counseling. That would be really good, right? But you know, I can't really afford couples counseling because it's kind of expensive. And why you know, why don't I have a job that produces more money where I can afford to do these things? And I'm such a failure. I can't manage with anything, and it's so bad. And well, I've heard that meditation is really good. And I heard this place in Redwood City where you can kind of learn meditation, and they don't really charge anything. You know, you just show up, and that might be a good thing. And then finally, I wake up and realize that's where I am. And it all started by having a thought about breakfast. And so I got involved, right? I started thinking. But I didn't have to get involved. I could say, oh, there's a... Recognize, oh, thinking about breakfast. Leave it at that. The sad thing is, many of us are living down these wonderful, you know, chains of cause and effect, of thoughts, reacting to our thoughts. And then, you know, I'm living at, you know, the thousandth reaction to something that happened yesterday. And the person I run into, they're living at the hundredth reaction to what happened to them in the morning. And my thousandth reactions, you know, is bumping into their hundredth reaction. You know, and nothing of it has to do with the present moment. Does it make some sense? So what we're trying, one of the things we're trying to do in meditation practice is simply coming back to what's primary. What's happening right now? What's the immediacy of what's happening in the moment? And cutting through the mind's tendency to create this chain of associated thinking that takes us further and further away. And if reality wasn't intruding on us as much as it does, we'd all be crazy. But luckily, reality intrudes. We're walking down the street and suddenly, you know, someone's walking against us and we have to kind of do something. So we wake up, that person's there. Or we get hungry, we have to pee, or, you know. There's various things that kind of, you know, remind us that suddenly we come to a door that's closed, we have to deal with the door. And so reality kind of, you know, intrudes. And so there's little moments where we kind of have to let go. And what we're trying to do in mindfulness is to try to come to what's primary more and more. And it's really beautiful because that doesn't necessarily diminish your life. You're not trying to diminish your life, but you're trying to see your life for what it is. And in doing that, learn to be free in the midst of it. It's so complex. No. You are complex. The meditation is.
Yeah.
Meditation is very simple.
I got this right. Okay, if you recognize that you're thinking, okay, you're meditating, or I do a lot of walking. Okay, I have dogs. I walk
great.
A lot in nature. That's where I have the hardest time. But if I catch myself thinking, and I acknowledge that I'm thinking, that diffuses the thinking, or it should diffuse the thinking.
It could eventually.
That would help to diffuse it?
Yeah, it's very.
To recognize that we're thinking.
It's very powerful. Every moment of recognizing anything, but recognize your thinking, is a very powerful moment. You might not see the benefits for quite a while, but it's a very, very significant moment.
See, you talk about associating things. Okay, I watched a TV show last night, and there was somebody on there that just did this whole thing, exactly what you were talking about, with kids with temper tantrums. And he said that exactly that, to diffuse a temper tantrum, which the temper tantrum could be like thinking, is to acknowledge what they want. And you just acknowledge it, and then it diffuses itself.
Mm-hmm. Good, yeah.
Is that the same thing?
Good, very much like that. So what you could do, but you might want to look a little more deeply. So you find yourself thinking about something. You might not just acknowledge what you're thinking, you might also acknowledge what you're feeling mm-hmm. at the time. And it might be that you need to drop into your body and acknowledge the emotion that's there. Because it's the emotion that's really what's going the important issue. If you keep thinking about the same, it might be. And until you acknowledge the emotion, you might not be able to really let go, put down the thinking, or be free of it.
I had this perception that I have all my life very strongly thought that I am my thoughts.
So what happens in the gap between thoughts? Who are you then?
That's my question.
That's your question. That's a good thing, place for you to investigate. Some people are very afraid of when their thoughts seem to be coming to an end, or the gap between thoughts, because they don't exist. And it's very frightening. But it's also very liberating. You are not your thoughts. You're much more than your thoughts.
Is this why people who are like in solitary confinement go crazy, because they don't have a reality to bump into to bring them back to the present reality?
I suppose it could be one of the reasons. But I learned about someone recently who was in solitary confinement and made himself very sane there. And when he described what he learned, someone who heard about it said, oh, he learned exactly what you were learning in this class, but he discovered it on his own. Last question, and then we'll...
When you're meditating and your mind wanders or you're having thoughts, should you literally shirk yourself back and say, I'm having these thoughts, I'm not into it.
You say jerk your mind back?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would never jerk my mind around. It's not a good idea. It's probably not necessary. So either you're lost. If you're really lost in your thoughts, there's no problem. You're so lost you don't even know that you're lost, right? In which case, there's no problem. But if you have enough attention, enough awareness to know that you're caught up in your thoughts, you're already attentive. And there's no problem. So, and then if you already notice, and then if you do something in your mind, like pull it around or do something, it's probably unnecessary and probably kind of stirring the pond more and more. Rather, what you do is recognize or appreciate that you're already a little bit present. It's already happening automatically, naturally. And then try to invite that to happen more, or try to encourage it, or appreciate it. Is that making some sense? It's much more nonviolent that way. And I think that, and the mind will respond much more favorably if it's, you know, if it's treated kindly. Yeah. Okay. We'll do a very short sitting. But before I do, I want to tell you about how you can buy silence. Allison, who has this great interest, passion almost, for supporting people in their meditation practice by, you know, cushions and pillows and all kinds of wonderful things, tapes, she came up with this idea she calls it Bells of Mindfulness, periods of silence with three bells. You use this bell here? Yeah, so it's this bell here, if you like the sound. And useful as a meditation timer, or use it as a reminder bell. So what you do is, track one is 45 minutes of silence with three bells at the end. And there are six tracks. Track five is 15 minutes of silence followed by this bell. So you put this in your CD player at home, and then you meditate, and then it plays, and then after 15 minutes it rings a bell and you know you're end of your period. So this is, you know, a meditation timer kind of thing. Or you just put it in, at home. You don't have to meditate even, just put it in. And you forget about it, right? And then 20 minutes later, however long you set it for, you hear this bing, bing, bing. And then you kind of take that it's like a mindfulness reminder. Where am I? You know what's going on right now? I didn't realize I was lost. And it's great. So we talk to her about it. So make yourself comfortable. It'll be a very short sit. Close your eyes. And take two deep breaths. And then bring your attention to the center of your head, to the area between your ears, behind your forehead, below your skull, kind of the general area of your brain. And feel what is there. It might be very subtle or almost nothing at all. It might be vibration or a sense of pressure or tightness or heaviness or vibration or lightness. But feel what is there. If you feel nothing, just hold your attention in that area. Let your attention wander around inside your skull a little bit, kind of sensing and feeling the general area of your brain. And then, as if your brain is a muscle, the next time you exhale, relax it. Relax your thinking muscle. And the next time you breathe, do the same thing. Relax, soften that which is inside your skull. And As you exhale, let whatever is there drain away with the out-breath, emptying the head. And then become aware of your breathing. Letting your breath, your breathing, arise on its own. Letting the breathing reveal itself to awareness into the empty space of the mind. Remember, keep it simple. There is a handout for today, and with homework. I hope you guys are doing the homework at home, because I think it's really helpful to do it, and I think you understand better the instructions if you apply it a little bit. And also, they can be fun to do, and do them together with someone else and talk about it. And so next week is our last meeting, and so please enjoy your thinking mind, be friends with it, and see if this instruction today is useful for us next week. Thank you.